Let's talk baseball. Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal joining us this afternoon. Hello, Sean.
Hello. How's everybody doing?
Doing great, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Rich.
World Series so far, even though no Red Sox in there, I found it pretty entertaining. Last night, even though I was sort of cheering for the Astros because of the main Black Bears connection with Jeremy Pena, I like Dusty sure. Baker, but I didn't mind seeing Kyle Schwarber launch one last night.
Yeah, I mean, quite a power display by the Phillies last night. 5 home runs, and, you know, whether they were on something from McCullers and whether he was tipping or not, still a pretty impressive display of home run power from that lineup. And when the Phillies are in that ballpark, they're energized by the crowd. It's a good hitting environment. And when they get going, they're pretty tough to stop. It's hard, you know, when the series started out 1-1, just trying to figure out some logistics, I was thinking, well, it'll probably go back to Houston. It's hard to see one team winning 3 in a row here. But the way the Phillies dominated and the confidence they have, I guess we can't rule that out.
No, and there's something to be said for being the team that's hot come October and, well, now November.
Yeah, and we're, you know, we're seeing this for the second straight year, even though this is an expanded playoff format. The Braves were much the same. In fact, I think they won the exact same number of games during the regular season as the Phillies did this year. If I'm not mistaken, they both had 87 wins, but clearly were peaking late in the season and got on that roll and couldn't be stopped. Same division, same record, same everything. So we'll see if that carries forward, and we'll see, I guess, going forward, whether teams start tanking if they have too big a lead in September so that they can dip into the second or third place in their division and follow the path of what might be then the last 2 World Series champions.
Well, whenever this series wraps up, the clock begins ticking for the Red Sox and other teams, and some decisions need to be made. Let's start with Xander Bogaerts. Is there any question in your mind that he'll explore free agency and they'll make a qualifying offer?
Certainly nothing to dissuade me from thinking that at this point, Rich. I was wondering whether they might put the full court approach on him in the month of October, because they do have that window of exclusivity until the World Series ends. And while I'm told there has been communication and outreach to the Bogaerts camp the last couple of weeks, I'm not sure that they have made any sort of formal offer, which I guess if you get this far down the road, even if you're the Red Sox, you're probably resigned to the fact that a player who has waited as long as Bogaerts has to test the market and see what else is out there, even if he ends up returning to the Red Sox, it's pretty tough to be at the 5-yard line, to switch sports metaphors, and not at least see what's available to you. And I think that's what Bogaerts and agent Scott Boras probably have in mind. It doesn't mean that the Red Sox can't re-sign him after he opts out, but I guess I was just hoping that there would be a little more aggressive approach before we got there.
Is he number one on the priority list, or is it Rafael Devers?
Well, given that Devers, you know, just doing kind of the simple math here, Devers is, of course, under control for another year. He's arbitration eligible for 2023, and we'll see what that results in. It may be a good jumping off point to examine some sort of extension in January or February. But given that there is more urgency and more of a time-sensitive nature to Bogaerts and free agency, I guess for the time being, I would say Bogaerts is a little bit more of a priority. If we were to zoom out and you were to ask me, well, if the Red Sox were told that they could only keep one, my guess is that they would push their chips toward Devers both because I think he has a higher ceiling and because he's almost 4 years younger.
As for guys who can become free agents, do you see them extending a qualifying offer to somebody like Michael Wacha?
I could see them choosing between Wacha and Eovaldi. I think there's probably too great a risk in offering them both. It's possible that both would accept it, and then you're essentially running that same rotation out there for next year, and I'm not sure that's the best idea given the results and outcome of the 2022 season. Myself, I would give one to Wacha and not to Eovaldi. I think Eovaldi's been a good teammate. And in retrospect, that four-year, $68 million deal was not terribly out of line given what they got for him. But, he's 32, 33 at this point. Obviously has had issues with durability only once since they acquired him in 2018 has he been able to stay off the disabled or the IL. Wacha has some challenges physically too, but he's a little younger, and I think on a one-year deal, even if it's an overpay at 19.6, that would be something to explore. And in a worst-case scenario, you get yourself an extra draft pick out of it. But, as I wrote about 10 days ago, Rich, I think the real issue is they need to find kind of that future ace, not unlike what Seattle did with Luis Castillo at the deadline. They traded for him with a year and a third of control and then quickly got him extended. And now he's a guy that's going to be, heading up their rotation in the prime of his career at 27, going on 28. I think that's where the Red Sox have to focus, whether it's I don't see that person available in free agency, but there are some trade possibilities. And I think most of their effort toward rebuilding the rotation for next year should be put in that focus.
Now, Chris Sale, to no one's surprise, taking his option for the next 2 years. Is he sort of the elephant in the room that he's getting paid all this money, but has pitched very few innings in recent seasons?
Yeah, I'm not sure what they can expect for Sale. I mean, they can say that he's healthy, and he may well be, but the concern has to be that he suffered three separate, somewhat freakish injuries in the span of about 7 months. He had the rib fracture in February. He took the line drive off the pinky on a comebacker right before the All-Star break. And then a month later, incredibly, had a bike spill that resulted in a broken wrist. So it's been one thing after another for him. And, while you can say that all those things have healed, at some point you start paying attention to the track record here and wonder exactly what you're going to get out of him. It sounds funny to be paying someone almost $30 million next year and saying whatever we get from him is a bonus, but that's almost the way they have to approach it.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. Well, they've got a little bit of money to spend. Some of it may be spent on their own guys, probably the largest portion of it. But this free agent class, Sean, how does it shape up? And who's out there that might be of interest to the Red Sox?
Well, it doesn't line up all that well with the Red Sox' most obvious needs. We've already talked about starting pitching. There are some, to be sure, top names available when you look at guys like Jacob deGrom and Justin Verlander. But if you're concerned that Chris Sale and some others might be physical risk, you're talking about a 40-year-old off of Tommy John surgery in Verlander, and DeGrom, who has missed a sizable chunk of last season with shoulder issues. So both of those have huge risks attached, and I would not, if I were the Red Sox, be pursuing either one of them, even though they're both great pitchers and have performed. I just think there's too much risk there. A guy like Carlos Rodon with San Francisco, and he too is something of a risk, but he's been healthy the last 2 years, and he's been one of the best left-handed starters in the game. He's only 30. I would expect that is someone they might go after. And then the other need is a corner outfielder, and there's not much available there either. They might have to hope that a guy like, say, Mitch Haniger, who has been a good player in the past, but he too missed some time this year, maybe you could get him on a reasonable deal and have him be the guy that takes over in right field with Alex Verdugo moving back to left field, where I think he's better suited defensively. But I would think that for both the rotation and the outfield, it would not surprise me if perhaps they found that the trade route is a more is a smarter way for them to fill both those needs.
There are some free agent catchers available out there. Are they happy with the duo of McGuire and Wong?
I would say they'd be okay with coming back with that too, but I think they'll explore what else is out there. Again, you've got some young guys available in trade. I think Oakland would talk to you about Sean Murphy. You might even have the Dodgers be willing to move Will Smith. They've got a terrific 21-year-old catcher who could be their guy in the future. Their payroll is approaching $300 million. Smith is now eligible for arbitration. He's starting to get more expensive. But I think they have to, before they do anything else, I think they have to look to the rotation. And I'm not sure there's enough trade capital to put that toward a deal for a catcher. So I would imagine they might... they could look at a guy like Mike Zunino, who obviously Heim Bloom knows from their time together in Tampa, throws well, gives you a power bat. He's going to strike out a ton and probably be down around 200 with his batting average. But if he could pop 25 to 30 homers at Fenway and throw out some base runners, that might not be a bad free agent investment.
On Boston Sports Journal, you've started doing off-season position analyses and at second base today. And an interesting situation there. Trevor Story had a tough year, but I think if anything that opened eyes this year in Story's play, it was what he did defensively in making that adjustment to second.
Yeah, and I think he probably didn't get enough credit for that. You know, we sort of assume that good athletic shortstops can play almost anywhere in the field. And it's easy to say that, but it's another thing to actually do it. And particularly given how quick spring training was, the fact that he came in late because he was signed late, then he went home for the birth of his child, then he got sick in the first 10 days of the season. It was one thing after another for him. But after the first couple of weeks, I thought he played superb second base. And as I wrote today, you know, if he plays more than 94 games, he's probably one of the three finalists for a gold glove at a new position. So I would expect a much better season from Story in 23, both offensively and defensively, as he gets a little more comfortable at a position that he wasn't, very familiar with until last March.
And if they're not able to bring back Bogarts, would they still keep Story at second?
That's the sense I get. I think some of that might have to do with the shortstop depth, in the system. When you look at Meyer and some of the other shortstop prospects they have, who may only be 2 or 3 years away, it might be smart to keep Story at second. See what you might be able to do to plug that for a couple of years and then have it open up for somebody like Meyer when he's ready. I think there are also some lingering questions and issues with Story's throwing arm and whether that could hold up going back to short in the longer throw. But he looks so comfortable at second, I'm not sure it makes a lot of sense to move him out of that. And of course, the priority is for them to try to retain Bogarts and keep him there for the foreseeable future.
Sean McAdam, Boston Sports Journal, talking baseball with us. Sean, great to catch up as always. We'll keep in touch here through the offseason because I think it's going to be a busy one for the Red Sox.
I think it probably is going to be that. Look forward to it, Rich.
All right. Thank you, Sean. Sean McAdam with us on Downtown.